You're recording.
So we're going to section number five, number 10. I've got Mike Booth, you are here, is that correct?
I am.
Come on forward.
It's not quite 2 o'clock yet.
I know, but he got here early. I mean, unless he wants to hang out and watch her.
I'll say it's a little awkward for me on this, I'm usually presenting.
On the other side. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you for your interest in being on the investigative committee. We received the information, the materials that you submitted. And I'd like to just kind of start out by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself. I couldn't tell whether, are you retired now or
yes.
Are you still, okay.
So my work-wise, I work for the federal government, the USDA, APHIS, Animal Plant Health Inspection Service for 30 years. 6 years of that as an inspector and 24 years as an investigator.
Okay.
And I got all kinds of stories to share.
So
if you
want
to hear them, I can tell you. My hobbies, I like to hunt and fish, explore. I'm into genealogy a little bit, and anything else comes my way, I'm all for it. So it's just interesting.
Very cool.
When Jane called me, I thought, oh, I don't know if I want to really get back into this.
Yay, government.
So do you have any other volunteer things you're doing at the moment, or?
I've been in, my most recent thing is I'm taking care of my elderly parents. My mom just passed away last summer, and then my dad, so that's why I'm here. So we moved from the Midwest out here to Arizona. But actually, I met my lovely wife 35 years ago in Gilbert, Arizona, where it was a little town.
Right.
A capital of the world.
Yeah. There you go. And I actually worked for the Department of Agriculture back then on the boll weevil program. Then I got a job and moved back to the Midwest. So.
I saw that I'm a fellow Iowan, so
oh, where are you
I saw
from?
That. I am from Des Moines.
Oh, well, there you are.
So, yeah. Always like to see fellow Iowans. We always migrate out here
yep.
where the weather is better, and that's a great place to be from. So, so it sounds like you're retired, so I always like to ask people whether they think, you know, the time commitment. You know, it's going to be problematic just because it's a small committee, and so of course it's important that people are there each month, otherwise we don't have quorum, and then
dealing with licensed accredited veterinarians is my deal.
Okay.
I've been with that for 30 years, so there you are.
So, and I know we have had more on our agenda, so I'm sure that the IC committees are probably meeting for probably a good 3 or 4 hours each month, right? I was previously on the IC committee, and I remember sometimes it was like barely an hour, but it's like our meeting today is probably going to 4, so.
At least.
Great, and my understanding is we had another gal in here this morning, and we do technically have 2 openings, so it sounds like there was just one where they're kind of hanging out until we were finding someone else, but we might do a little shuffling. So Victoria, would it be appropriate then, since we have 2 openings, that we can...
Real quick though, do we have any other pending ones? Because I know we've had interviews in the past. Were any of those like still up for consideration that we have to look at?
I don't think there's anyone left.
Okay, cool, thank you.
Okay.
So.
Sounds good. I mean, because I think both candidates, you know, I thought we're no?
You do go to executive
session. Yeah, we'll have to discuss them.
Is that a motion?
Okay.
If you want to have that part now.
Well, why don't
then?
Okay, in that case, then I think we're good with your piece. Why don't we just table this for now, and then we can vote later.
Yeah, we'll discuss, yeah.
And then you don't have to, as we go into executive session, and then we can have Victoria or Tracy follow up with you after our meeting to let you know.
You don't want to hear any wild, exciting stories.
I mean, but
by the way,
at the same time, I don't want to be here until 6.
We had to rein in her from asking about stories
right,
earlier.
Right. By way of explanation, I know Mike Booth's daughter. She is a dental technician at my dentist's office, and so that was how.
Look at Jane recruiting people at her dentist's office.
Yes,
I can start talking to people
out
in the world. I can start meeting people apparently.
Thank you for being
I'm just
here.
Just gonna walk around.
Just to give you a little insight to things I do like to do work-wise, I like to collaborate with law enforcement agencies. That was a thing back in the Midwest that I pride myself on. We did work a rotation at Iowa State University where we trained the new students, I think it was every other Tuesday. So I had a lot of experience in doing that. I can work in the fraudulent blood program. I like to work with the other agencies. So I don't know how you work with your state veterinarian or the area veterinarian charge here.
Right.
The former ADIC here was a good friend of mine, and he was here for a few years and moved back to the Midwest. So I've got connections that way, and especially in the federal part of it.
Great.
So.
Thank you. And I didn't know, I'm sorry, I don't think I asked if anybody had any other questions for Mr. Booth before we send him on his way.
No, but I like when people can work well with others.
Yes.
That's a good deal.
Doesn't happen
can get
very often.
Be very
right.
Ugly. There is an art to that. So.
Yes.
I work with several state veterinarians. All my experience has all been in the Midwest. I've worked all the states: Wisconsin, Minnesota, North, South Dakota, Nebraska, Missouri, Kansas, and I have worked all across the country. So, in fact, I always say one week I was at the Pacific Ocean, and at the end of the week, I ended up at the Atlantic Ocean. So, traveling,
you're
I'm
probably
not
enjoying
excited.
Retirement. Then.
It's yeah, fun.
So. Yeah. Not a whole lot of traveling with this job.
No. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you for being
awesome.
Here.
And if you have any questions, ask, and I can give you whatever credentials or whatever you need. So.
Okay, great. Sounds thank good.
You. Nice to meet everyone.
Thank you. Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you in person.
Yes, instead of on the phone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so.
So with that, real quick, would that be open discussion that we just do later? Or, I mean, if we have to do an executive session, it'd be better to do now, right? Or is that just open discussion?
Are
you
going to do the IARs?
Yeah, let's finish up all our stuff.
Okay.
It's supposed to be gone. It won't matter if we
do. Yeah, yeah, okay, then it's open. Okay.
Because it will be. Yeah.
Apparently I missed something.
There wasn't anything to miss because he didn't know. What am I telling you?
Okay, gotcha. I just happened to be sitting next to him. Okay, so we are going back to the IIRs number 2, 2307, in regards to Paige Bernasco, DBM. Tracy, will you read the summary?
Sure. Case 2307, the complainant is Joe A. Kesheshian, and the respondent is Paige Bernasco, DBM. On June 10th, 2022, Benny, a 3.5-year-old male Shih Tzu, was presented to respondent for humane euthanasia. Complainants agreed to respondent's request to evaluate the dog prior. After exam, respondent was not comfortable euthanizing the dog. She provided an estimate for diagnostic treatment, which complainants declined. On June 11, 2022, after discussion, complainants elected to relinquish the dog, and the dog was transferred to human animal care and control. On June 12, the dog was seen on the PAG adoption website. Complainants went to the facility to retrieve the dog the next day. Complainants were advised that the dog had water stones and stones in the urethra. They took the dog home. By the following day, the dog was lombarded again. On June 14, 2022, the dog was presented to BCA Valley Animal Hospital and Emergency Center for vomiting and diarrhea. The dog underwent a cesotomy and GI exploration. Dr. Brodsky identified a mass of necrosis at the proximal aspect of the descending colon with multiple mental adhesions. Complainants elected to have the dog euthanized at that time. Dr. Brodsky explored the mass post-mortem and discovered an abscess within the walls of the colon, which had almost completely obstructed the lumen. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-1, with Ms. Radajak opposed.
Okie dokie. So we do not have the complainant here, but we have Mr. Stoll. Are you speaking or monitoring?
Monitoring only.
Okay. And let's see, Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah. This one was tough going through all this. And, you know, as far as medically wise, I'm not sure that there was anything on the respondent side, but communication-wise was definitely a concern, and maybe just approach of the case. and I'm definitely looking for some insight from other board members. The fact is this dog had had continuous issues. These owners have been dealing with lots of health issues with this dog and made the really painful decision to euthanize. And while I get that every veterinarian has that right to decline to do that, I'm not sure that it was handled in the best manner. Refusing to euthanize an animal, which that in the veterinarian's words was that could be treated, was not something that they would do. And then also stating in her medical record that the people did not provide appropriate care recently. We're just, it was actually not factual. And to her point, though, she didn't have all that information, right? She's just looking at the pet in front of her. She didn't have all of the previous medical records. But, you know, at the end of the day, this dog really suffered because the decision was the right decision. And the fact that there was, pushing towards relinquishing it to a shelter to take care of a pet, and the fact that the pet was available for adoption the following day with a significant issue. This was just a heartbreaking case for the owners and just a very, very painful experience for the dog. So I could go back and forth. Again, I don't think medically there was anything wrong with her treatments, but I just don't know if the overall handling of the case and communication was where we would expect it to be.
And I agree.
It was ethically wrong to charge them for another exam. It's their property. They decide what to do with their property. Charging them money for making a decision about their property is just wrong. And it turned out the veterinarian was wrong, and the owners were right. It needed to be euthanized right then. But no, she forced them to pay some more money, jump through some hoops, and then pay some more money to somebody else to get it euthanized.
Yeah. And that's my big concern is, we can't be as veterinarians we can't be at the whim of the client to just demand what they want and we have to carry it out. But when we decide to not do something, we have to have good, sound judgment as to why we're doing that. And here it was just, I don't want to do a 3.5-year-old dog because we can treat it.
And don't charge them money for not doing what you don't want to do.
Right? Yeah. Well,
send them down the road.
Yeah. Well.
I tell them, I'm not going to do that. Take it somewhere else.
But even still then, it's like, okay, I'm not going to do that. There is a medically justified reason. The client apparently knew something was wrong with this dog, didn't know what exactly it was, but the dog was not acting right. Us refusing that just allows animals to suffer.
Right.
And if an animal suffers because a veterinarian doesn't euthanize something, that is a major problem. If the client just comes in and says, I want to euthanize it just because it looked to be cross-eyed, okay, you can decline those. But when you decline something, you better have a darn good reason, and that animal better not need to legitimately be euthanized. And if they do, that's a fault of the veterinarian. So I have a big issue with that personally.
And it definitely hit home for me. Like, it was just not, and because again, I see this on a regular basis, right? And where there are times where veterinarians just like, it's kind of, it's kicking the can down the road.
Yep.
And putting that burden on somebody else. And at the end of the day, it's the pet that suffers, and it's that client that has to go through that anguish. So I just, again, I'm definitely open for.
It's not a benign kicking in the can, for sure.
But humane euthanasia is not a required service that a veterinarian has to offer. So for them to decline it is totally fine.
No.
And for them to charge for an exam that they offered to do and the client agreed to isn't a problem either. And then they chose to relinquish the dog. Then they chose to pick the dog up again. Then they chose to go through a medical procedure. I mean, they also got to make choices through this whole thing.
They had to make choices. But
well, within the confines of what the doctor
Of what the doctor told them, right? Like, they made a choice to euthanize their pet. That is what they wanted to do. And, I mean, even the communication that the doctor typed in there, the missus wanted to speak with her husband later that morning because he was sleeping, and she told her that she should get him up to have this discussion now. Well, if the dog wasn't that critical, that the doctor didn't feel that she needed to euthanize it, that it was something that could easily be treated, then why does she need to rush in and go wake up the husband to make a decision on something? So, like, it just was just a bad communication. And yes, I agree, you don't have to provide that service, but that owner is now backed into a corner. I've gone to a veterinarian, this is the only one that's open because it's the middle of the night. You've told me you're not gonna do this. And this really, you know, and so are they going to want to go through that process again? Then they're going to be like, well, okay, then we'll surrender the dog because maybe then they'll get fixed. Like, but then they turn around and see that the dog's available on a website, available for adoption. like.
Maybe then they had false hope, like, oh, maybe we can get him back.
But again, that's not on that veterinarian.
No, it's not.
Yeah, but the veterinarian practically coerced
yeah.
a charge out to say, okay, if I pay you $150 for the exam, maybe you'll go ahead and euthanize it. I don't have to pay any more money. I mean, that's kind of how it went down.
I think it's fairly common to require an exam.
Yeah, I've seen plenty of veterinarians that will not euthanize without an exam.
It is, but if I'm turning away, a lot of times I'm not doing it, I'll send it back. But yeah, I agree with you. I think this is a hard violation to find, but I think there's some issues going on here. And is it going to be a letter of concern or is it an ethical thing? But
I've got minimum, a letter of concern.
Yeah, minimum is a letter of concern, I would think.
I mean, that
I am concerned about turning an animal away that truly needed.
I don't think at the time that this veterinarian saw this dog that she felt the dog had something that wasn't treatable.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there were two prior exams of which mm-hmm. all diagnostics and treatment were declined by the owners.
Mm-hmm.
So all she sees is, I have a 3.5-year-old dog that clearly has something going on. It needs treatment, but the owner's declining it. It's not uncommon for people to say, do you want to turn your dog over to us? We'll try and get it care or find it a home or whatever if you can't afford it or whatever. You don't want to deal with it. And I personally don't do euthanasias unless I find that there's a reason for the euthanasia. So at this point in time, in my mind, she did not find just reason for the euthanasia, and she turned it over to the county. Now, county should have done a full exam and figured out what was going on this dog, but that's not the case we're reviewing.
But I think it's incumbent on the veterinarian. If you're going to take that animal on for responsibility, it's up to you. It's not, oh, I'm going to take it and I'm just going to transfer it to animal care. So I have a problem with that, being like, oh, I'm just shuffling it around.
I don't know.
No, that
animal care
suffering
control
in that
took
time.
It. I mean,
well,
it's not.
Yeah, animal care control has to take it.
No,
if it's going to be a surrender there, I'm pretty sure they're going to take it. They can. The veterinarian could have, too, but the veterinarian decided not to for whatever reason.
But two veterinarians clearly decided not to. This one and the one at Pima. Both decided not
to. But I guess, this is those conversations we've had for a long time.
I mean, are you going to find a violation against the doctor at Pima for not euthanizing?
Well, it's animal control. We don't have control over that.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong, right? I'm just asking, like, some help from my friends here, like, in having this thought of is there a letter of concern on some communication and yes, I totally understand. You can't make a doctor euthanize an animal, but I think we also have to be cognizant that not everybody can afford to continue to put tens of thousands of dollars. Like, they spent a decent amount of money at this clinic with multiple issues with this dog. They had a potential foreign body at one point. The dog had a snake bite at another point. Like, this is a young dog that they have put a lot of money in. And yes, we should not make decisions based on people's finances, but that person is making decisions based on their finances. They can no longer provide for what this dog needs. And so they're making a decision to put the dog to sleep because they know it's sick and it had been getting treatment at another clinic. So, I mean, I just think that maybe there's an opportunity for some better communication or empathy.
Sounds like a letter.
And respecting the property rights of others.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to sleep with myself at night, and I'm not going to euthanize something that doesn't need to be euthanized. So.
Which is fine, but this one.
It's every individual's decision.
I'd say
2020,
isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say that she was wrong in that. I think she had every right to do an exam, and I think she had every right to say.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think she's wrong in it, but I think you have to take on some personal responsibility when you do that. If you're going to decline something, and you're going to take that animal on, you need to take on responsibility.
Can I just propose just giving a letter of concern for communication, civil communication with the clients? I feel like some of these things that were said and how they were directed, even in her own medical notes, were kind of a little on the harsh side. Especially in an emotional situation like that.
Is that a little too broad, or is that?
I would drill down on her question and answer skills, too. She didn't ask very good questions to figure out what was going on, to know why they wanted to euthanize it, or she would have euthanized it.
Okay. Dave's taking notes over there.
So. He's going to have a great newsletter this month.
I mean, you've got the owners yelling at the staff. I'm not going to vote. Go ahead.
Well, okay. I'd be yelling at the staff too if I thought that my animal was that sick and needed to euthanize and you refused to do it. Like, you're not treating my animal and I can't afford to do anything more for it.
Right.
Like, so I probably would be upset. We all know that euthanasia scenarios are upsetting, but so.
Well, and how many stories do we know of a veterinarian taking an animal on and then adopting it out, and then the original owner's finding out that animal's been adopted out, and now it's a huge process there. So like I said, the fact that veterinarians do that puts them in a major problematic issue. Anyway.
That is not what we're talking about.
No, it isn't, but these are the things where we have to take those things into consideration. A lot of veterinarians don't want to take those things. So that's what the letter of concern is.
Maybe we can reread or read back the letter of concern to see.
And we need a second on it. So,
letter of concern and communication, in client communication. Is that just like narrow it down?
That's too broad. That's
yeah,
too broad.
I think it's a little too broad there. I think it's more treating the client's requests with respect.
Respectful.
And acknowledge, see, how am I going to say it? But basically, my opinion is if you're going to refuse to do something and you're taking an animal on, you're taking responsibility for it. You don't get to shove it off to someone else. So, I mean, I don't know. What you guys' thoughts are there.
Well, but she did. The surrender was directly to PAC. It wasn't
yeah.
to the
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's
PAC,
with
so.
Some like coercion
but
there. But
she
it's like
facilitated it.
Yeah.
I mean.
So Tracy, does
it
this
empathy
give you?
I think empathy is detailed enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
If you all
so
agree
what is
that
it?
That's another descriptive.
What is
empathy?
Making sure we approach each case from a true medical standpoint, not emotional.
Listening to understand.
Because we declined to do the euthanasia based on basically emotion.
Understand what they said.
So we're writing a letter of concern because she's not empathetic enough?
No, I'd say she didn't take the actual facts into consideration.
I know a lot of doctors that would fit that mold.
I would fit that mode.
Like I said, she didn't take the actual facts into consideration. That's the issue here. Is if we'd actually explored this a little more, we'd have seen this dog was sick. And that doesn't mean that the owner can't afford the diagnostics, but if the owner can't afford the diagnostics, we can't do anything else here. The animal's got issues. We've spent a lot of money. It's like we need to take all those things into consideration. And
so
the surrendering of animals becomes a major problem a lot of times.
So you don't feel it's just a communication issue?
No, I do. Yeah, no, it's all communication.
Okay.
But I feel it's more of when the doctor makes a decision to not euthanize, you better have darn good reasons as to why that animal is going to continue to suffer.
So, Mark, what would you do?
I was just wondering if it's like failure to fully understand the
yeah.
owner's intentions or reasons.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, at the point that she's trying to make offer other suggestions and the owners are yelling at her, cursing at her, and calling her names, I think I would have declined all further services and walked away. They're lucky she provided another option. I'm like, this was a, I mean, she was not being treated well, neither was her staff. So,
again,
she's lucky
the
owners are lucky they got what
yeah,
they
the
did.
Client wasn't being hurt either.
Right, the client, right. So, the initial owner came in, wanted these services, was declined those services, was given this other alternative, and the other one who was sleeping was supposed to be woken up from the sleep to deal with this. So probably not, but,
okay.
So
what's the language?
Well, that's where we can't, so.
Well, we haven't moved forward after that.
I need to
so
listen
we can get
to
the language. And
she needs
yeah.
to listen
yeah.
well enough that she understands what's being told to her.
Yeah.
And she didn't in this case.
Mm-hmm.
That. Victoria, are we good? Okay.
So there's a motion.
Is there a
second?
We have a motion and a second to dismiss the case but offer a letter of concern. Okay, should we, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
I'm opposing. Nay.
So nay, nay. Okay, so motion carries. To offer a letter. Okay. Now we're going down to number 42309 in regards to Tabitha Henson, DVM. Tracy, will you read the summary?
Yes. Case 2309, the complainant is Erin Bell, the respondent is Tabitha Henson, DVM. On August 1st, 2022, Luna, a one-year-old female Siberian Husky, was presented to respondent due to swelling on the left side of the dog's face. Respondent evaluated the dog and recommended treatment for a suspected abscess. The pet owner questioned respondent exam and suspected diagnosis, but agreed to medications and baseline blood work initially. Complainant's interaction with staff prompted her to request for her dog back without blood collection. She paid for the exam and left the premises. The dog was subsequently treated by Canyon Pet Hospital. On August 8, 2022, complainant stated that she called to request copies of the dog's medical records and was advised that they had no record of the dog. Complainant claims she was provided with records for two deceased dogs unknown to her. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay. We do not have a respondent or a complainant in this case, and Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
All right, so for 2310, yeah, going through, I mean, just reading everything.
2310
or 239? Wait, oh, I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong one. I opened up the next one. I'm sorry, let me go back and open that one up again. I apologize.
Dr. Henson.
I jumped ahead of the wrong one. So, yeah, I mean, going through, reading everything on this, you know, not records thing is an issue there, and I don't know if anybody has any concerns there, but yeah, I mean, I'm making a motion to dismiss as no violation based on, I mean, they're just, yeah, it's just, yeah, there's, I don't see any violation of the statute. So, yeah, so I'll make a motion to dismiss as no violation.
Second.
Motion and a second to dismiss case 2309. All those in favor say aye. Oh, sorry. Further discussion?
No.
Just briefly, because I had this in my letter. I mean, this may dismiss with a letter of concern because she did not, communication was broken down. She didn't recognize that she had people that had special needs and she needed to focus or readjust how she was communicating, and she didn't get it done. The second one didn't get done very well either, but eventually they got it done.
Right.
So, I mean, there were communications issues, but yeah, medically she did what she could and they're the ones that decided to leave, so.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's communication is a problem or is it just one of those things, again? Because that's sort of my head.
Most of the cases, that's always the problem.
So yeah. I did not write a letter concerning my notes. I did write dismissed. I just had that in my notes. Communication broke down. She didn't recognize what she was dealing with.
And I think that's kind of more of an experience thing, but again,
not
a
Maybe she didn't know.
It's going to take a while.
Yeah.
And the client.
Well, they were new. They
figured
were new
it out real quick,
Okay. So, yeah, motion and I forget a second.
Okay. Yeah. So, motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Carry on to number 2310 and 2311. They are a two-pack, Stuart Sherrill DVM and Schuyler Burns DVM. Tracy, they have the same summary, right?
Yes, they do. So case 2310 and 2311. 2310 is complainant Joe Guzman and respondent is Stuart Sherrill DVM. 2311 is the same complainant, Joe Guzman, and the respondent is Shiloh Burns, CBM. On May 13th, 2022, Lucy, a 6.5-year-old intact female boxer, was presented to Arrow Animal Hospital for a swollen right front paw. Dr. Males noted the dog had ulcerated mammary masses and a mass on the right front paw and carpus affecting the dog's mobility. All diagnostics recommended were declined by the complainant. On June 13, 2022, the dog was presented to Dr. Burns for exam and diagnostics. Radiographs revealed metastasis in lungs, thus complainant was advised that surgery and chemotherapy were unlikely to be curative. Dr. Burns discussed euthanasia, treatment options, and referral to an oncologist with the complainant. On July 1, 2022, the dog was presented to Dr. Sherrill for biopsies as opposed to tumor excisions to type the tumors for possible further care. Pathology results revealed that the mammary masses were tubular carcinoma and fibrosis on the foot. On July 23, 2022, the dog passed away. Complainant expressed concerns that chemotherapy was not prescribed or administered to his dog to extend the dog's life. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. And that was in both case 2310 and 2311.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant. We have Mr. Stoll monitoring.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We will take 2310 first, and we'll vote on them separately. Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
All right, so thank you. Going through this again, as we've talked about in some other cases, kind of frivolous complaints, that's basically where we're at here. This is nothing more than misdirected grief from the owner to the veterinarian. The masses, the mammary masses, which were ulcerated on May 13th, that's cancer. It's ulcerated through, it's pretty much gonna be cancer every single time. And that didn't just happen overnight. They can grow fast, but that didn't happen. So this is not on the veterinarian, this is on the owner for missing that stuff, not bringing the animal in properly at the right time frame. And I mean, intact female boxers, it's, or intact females in general, mammary cancer is not an uncommon thing. So yeah, declining it initially. So yeah, there's no violations here. This is a dismiss with no violation.
Motion. Motion and a second to dismiss case 2310. All those in favor, no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, now on to 2311.
2311, second verse, same as the first. Really nothing new here. It's no violation. So I'd make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second to dismiss case 2311 as well. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. Okay, let's try to finish up these IARs and if we need another bathroom break. Number 10, 2316 regards to Mary Ann Bolser, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read the summary.
For case 2316, the complainant is Garrick and Catherine Hook. The respondent is Mary Ann Bolser, DVM. On August 19, 2022, Lacey, a one-year-old female German Shepherd, was presented to respondent for spay procedures. The dog was pre-medicated, then induced. The dog was intubated and placed on the anesthesia machine. It was noted that the dog had not taken a breath, therefore her chest was ausculted for a heartbeat. None was found, and CPR was initiated. CPR was unsuccessful, and the dog passed away. It was found that the induction agent was not perforated with penicillin G that was administered IV. And the committee could not come to a recommended disposition in this matter. Two votes were made and both resulted in a failed motion, so.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this one.
Just note my appearance to monitor.
Thank you, Dave. We don't have the complaint in here, so yes, but Mr. Stoll monitoring.
Yeah, so it was a horrible case. Obviously the committee struggled with this, rightfully so, because it would be no veterinarian I've ever met would intend for something like this to happen. It can happen. The mix-up, they look the same in the syringe, but there's a lot of other things that look the same in the syringe too. So there's a responsibility there on the part of the veterinarian. Even if the veterinarian wasn't the one that drew it up and wasn't the one that administered it, and where it's probably the most difficult thing in the world to call an owner and tell them what happened. She did it, you know, she owned it and that happened. I was super confused in the complaint where the complainant said that the respondent told them to bring it to the board and that was cleared up right there. So I was kind of shocked
Nikki.
By that. In the complaint, the complainant stated that the respondent advised to bring this to the board. That was cleared up that wasn't what happened. Okay. Yeah. I guess there's definitely an issue here. The pet died because something was done very wrong. And where that doesn't feel good because the veterinarian admitted it, it still happened. I did understand the motion that was brought by the committee for gross negligence. There's possibly that, but there's also, I had a question in the first place when I was reading this, all the materials, was why was the propofol in the fridge? Back in the day, veterinarians would put it in the fridge because there was no preservative in it, right? And it's only good for so long after you puncture it. And so it was considered a fairly expensive induction agent at the time, so they would have us stick it in the fridge so we could keep using it, right? Not saying that's right, but that's what happened. Well, then the company realized that, gee, veterinarians are doing this. So they were able to create propofol with a preservative in it. And so propofol 28 came about, and so it's good for 28 days. So it doesn't have to be kept in the fridge, but propofol isn't supposed to be stored in the fridge either. So I was kind of curious if it was more of like, there's a rule about that, storage of medications. It's RFP 11502I.
Before we go that route, do we know if this is the responsible doctor of the practice?
It is. Oh, sorry, I made that assumption because of all the.
And I just wanted to clarify, as the same kind of thing, the technician was not a certified tech, correct? From what I'm reading, it looks like we're just out of assistant.
Correct. No. There was the team member who drew it up who was new.
That was the shiny.
And then there was the team member that worked for her for 4 years that was not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one was kind of shadowing the other, the new person, right? She was supposed to be watching the new person. My concern for this is that was not the only thing that this new person, they also said that during CPR they had to go get another technician because she wasn't familiar with the pop-off valve on the machine. And when you start having a technician that draws up the wrong drug and isn't familiar with the pop-off valve and you put them in that position to monitor anesthesia, there's something wrong here. You're not training your staff appropriately, and that to me falls to the responsible vet.
Oh, well, it always does. I mean, you can't, there is a lot of, I know it comes up, right? You can't watch your team all the time, but you're ultimately responsible for them. It's your license. It doesn't.
But rather than gross negligence, to me, it was more of you don't have training protocols in place to ensure that people are fully trained before they make mistakes like this. Do you know what I mean? Like it's.
Which I think would be a separate case against a premise holder, but I mean, the fact that this still happened.
Yes.
Oh, this was the premise holder, I'm sorry. But the fact that this still happened is on the veterinarian, in my opinion. It's either veterinarian, unless there's a certified technician.
However,
the certified technician wasn't there, then it's got to go back to the license holder.
Right. But the solution didn't really make sense to me either. It's like, oh, well, I have a solution. That doesn't make sense because, again, propofol doesn't go in the fridge. So to me, however you look at this, a veterinarian shall follow manufacturer's label requirements for storage and handling of veterinary medications. So that wasn't done either.
You mentioned it, Nikki, and listening to the IC audio, they wrestled with it. And, you know, it being a mistake, it wasn't intentional. If it was intentional, we'd be dealing with a totally different issue. That's what gross negligence is. It's an unintentional mistake. Correct, Mark?
Yeah. Malpractice is more, you kind of know you're not supposed to do it, you still do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, negligence is negligence.
Yes. So obviously, I would concur with the IC was tied, but I would concur with their finding the initial motion of gross negligence.
I'll make a motion just so we can have more discussion. I would make a motion ARS 3222-3211, gross negligence for the administration of PEN-GIV to the patients instead of propofol, which led to the death. Can I make that motion first? And then
was it gross negligence?
Gross negligence,
yeah. You could relate it to that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Right? Can I do that?
You could relate that to that rule.
So can I relate it?
It's a separate violation.
Right, that's what I... So I wouldn't relate it.
I would make it separate.
Okay. I'll second Nikki's motion.
Well, and that's
11
as it relates to...
No, you don't have to
relate that. No, I don't have to relate that one, no. Right?
No, that's a standalone.
Oh, well, that's...
She's talking about the other one?
The other one, sorry.
So that one would be 18.
Thank you, 18.
Oh, it would be 18 on that one? So, and then ARS 3222, 32, 18 as it relates to R311-5021. For failing to follow manufacturer's labeled requirements for the storage and handling of veterinary medications.
Do we know for sure propofol does not store it in the fridge?
Yeah, so I was just looking it up, and propofol, and I don't know if she has on here if it's propofol or propofol 28. Propofol says it can be stored anywhere from 40 to 77 degrees.
Right, but refrigerators are typically at 36 or lower.
Well, it's 4 degree, that's usually 40 degrees.
But that's below
Celsius. But
that's room temperature, 40 to 70 is room temperature.
Yeah, fridge is just above freezing typically.
Yeah, so anywhere from like...
In the laboratory,
yeah.
Four degrees Celsius is your refrigerator, and the propofol says it can be stored at 4 degrees Celsius to whatever else, the high end of Celsius. So I'm just saying, like, that's not a 100%...
Celsius is hard. I mean, it's a lot different, and there's a big variation. I mean,
so because I'm in charge of inventory and have been for a very long time, the labels that I've seen are in Fahrenheit, not in Celsius, and it's 40 to like 77 degrees is what like the room temperatures always say, and I would say that's what propofol is at room temperature, according to the label of the manufacturer.
So, that's
on the edge. Flexibility to put in the fridge or not.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
depending on your fridge.
Yeah, nothing's going to precipitate out of it.
I hope you all have a thermometer in your fridge.
Yeah,
they're digital. Usually it gives you a range on the label, mm-hmm. 35 to 45.
Yeah.
Because they don't want you to get close to 32, right?
Yeah.
35 to 45 is what vaccines have to be at. Generally, other stuff is in that range.
Yeah.
Also,
FDA recommends refrigerator temperatures be set at or below 40 degrees. So, if the lower level of propofol is 40 degrees, you could technically say that falls within the range of a refrigerator. So, I'm just saying, like, if we're gonna make a motion on something and have a violation based on a temperature of whether that drug should be there, it's riding the line.
Yeah.
So
I've never seen a fridge at 40, I guess. So.
Yeah, it seems high. It'd probably be in the food safety issues if you're up to 40 degrees in a fridge. But still, it's also it's a gray area there. I think that'd be a harder one.
Beer at 36.
What's up?
Not vaccines.
But. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think putting it in a fridge is not a problem because it has been refrigerated before, and I mean, that probably falls into whole Nduka stuff where we can actually modify what we do. So I think that'd be a harder violation, but I agree with you, it's room temperature storage. That being said, it's also good for longer than 8 hours. But.
Even if, I think you can throw that, still, read the label.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can't mix them up.
I don't care if they're white.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Bottle sizes, too. I mean, does penicillin come in a tiny little 20-mil vial? I've only ever seen 50
or 100. Oh, I mean, I've never seen it in a little bottle.
I mean, maybe it does. I don't know, but still.
100 mil. It comes in 100, 250, and 500.
And it's significantly thicker than propofol, so you're going to know when you're sitting there.
If you're trained properly, you're going to know. The issue is she wasn't trained properly.
No, and I agree with you there, and that's a violation. But still, this still falls on the doctor of this animal died.
Right.
Yeah. So that's where the violations come in.
This doctor is responsible for making sure that the staff that was administering this is trained.
Okay.
And
she
wasn't trained.
Are you going to drop that one?
So I'll just relates to training.
Stick with the gross negligence.
Yes.
Okay, so is there anything else you want to add, Nikki, or are we good to then vote?
Can we send?
Yeah. Since we're finding a violation, we just go for everything.
Wait, is there a second though?
Yes.
Yes.
I seconded.
So we have to vote, yes.
We can vote. We're good on that piece. Okay. So all those in favor finding a violation for.
So one thing though, can we add? I mean, are you taking this gross negligence for the administration of? Pen GIV to the dog instead of propofol, which led to the death of the dog?
Yes.
Can we add, and staff wasn't properly trained? Due to staff, this happened because staff wasn't properly trained?
And failure to assign staff that
I guess the question
trained.
Would be around gross negligence.
I guess not.
Would that factor into like...
That is the gross negligence.
Like personnel issues, or would that make it too broad where the challenge could come up a little bit easier?
I think when you adopt the findings of fact, that'll kind of tell that narrative.
Yeah.
That, and it'll be the facts that'll support your violation. So,
which is in here.
So I would just leave it at death of the dog and then talk about everything that led to that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Did you say roll call?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do a roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is a nay. Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes.
Then do you want to entertain another motion to adopt the investigative report as your findings of fact?
I make a motion to offer the consent agreement first.
Yeah, we should adopt findings of fact first.
Okay.
And then we'll hear all priors.
Well, yeah, because you should be offering a consent agreement adopting the committee's findings of fact versus your findings of fact, and we've already done the conclusions of law.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've already done that. So I'll make a motion to accept the committee's findings of fact as the board's findings of fact. And that's it.
Second. I think that's fine.
Okay.
Second.
If you're in agreement with them.
Yeah.
Okay. A motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Okay. And then, Nikki, I think you want to maybe offer a consent agreement.
So can I ask about any previous?
Yeah.
Yes. So Dr. Walzer had a letter of concern and for communication in 2005, and that's the only other issue she's had.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to offer a consent agreement. With a probation of 1 year and obtain
This is where, because it sounds like she's kind of beating herself up a lot, and I mean she learned from this already there, and this is where kind of do we become overly punitive, or is it kind of like, okay, this was a mistake. I mean, this wasn't intentional. I think she figured it out. Hopefully she put some processes in.
CEs would be on training and put those processes.
Right. Yeah.
That's
so,
what I'm wondering is if we could do continuing education in the area of developing and or providing education, you know, team education or training.
Because CE for like anesthesia, that she knows.
Right.
I mean, it was just a mistake. So I think can you do that? Like,
does it
like staff develop? Well, I mean, no, I'm just saying like, because we got to tie like make it relative to what we're finding a violation of, and if the violation was we didn't train the staff right, can we have her take CE on like, I don't know, practice management or something in relation to that?
Sure, I guess we do 2 hours of CE in there. Practice management, there's
Something around which is like training of technicians, and that's a really hard, broad one, I know, but I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
But isn't there something within practice management on keeping your ongoing continuing education of your staff?
I would imagine, or how to train your staff or something.
Or you could do it specific to medication management.
The staff training.
I'm going to say
1 year for 2 hours of CE in the area of practice management, but no
practice management. And you related to the issues.
Because I don't want to do like financial practice management stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Which would be helpful too.
It's
always good.
So 1 year of probation to obtain 2 hours of CE in the area of practice management related to
staff training.
The issues set forth in the consent agreement.
I like that legalese.
And that's it.
I mean,
that leaves it broad enough, but specific.
And it'll be pre-approved, so hopefully you can tell from.
Yeah.
For staff training.
How many?
There's a lot of them.
How many units?
There is.
2 hours.
Pardon?
Two.
Yeah.
Two.
Thank you.
Okay. And then, is there anything else we have to include in there?
I don't have anything else.
I do think if you're okay, not so much in the order, but in the in the findings of fact, and I know that they're there, but, you know, I think one of the reasons why you're looking at this as a CE case and nothing more is because of the facts and everything that she did once they figured out what happened. And maybe, you know, putting that, just to memorialize that, you know, the board is taking into consideration as mitigation, you know, the steps that she took.
Yeah.
So could we make an addition to the findings of fact? Is that what we're doing?
Maybe or just add.
Yeah. The board recognizes the efforts that were made by Dr. Bolzer to identify the error, to educate the pet owner as to what happened, and also to at least she identified it. She owned it. I don't know that.
So she took responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That she took responsibility in the case.
Perfect. Thank you.
There we go. I think we're good.
Okay. Okay. There's no further discussion. Do we have a second on that?
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay.
And not accepted, invited for an informal.
Yes.
So if not accepted within 30 days, to an informal?
I said 35.
35 days?
Okay, sounds good. Let's do number 11-2355 in regards to Nicole Hildy, DVM. Tracy, if you read the summary.
Recused from this case.
Okay, please note for the record, Dr. James is recused.
Case 2355. Karen Venue is the complainant and the respondent is Nicole Hildy, DVM. On September 9th, 2022, Taco, a 2-year-old intact female Australian Kelpie, was adopted by a complainant. The dog remained at the shelter until she was spayed per adoption agreement. The adoption agreement also states that the adopter is not the legal owner of the animal until surgical sterilization is complete and the animal is released to the adopter. On September 12th, 2022, the dog was spayed and discharged to complainant later that day. On September 14th, 2022, the dog was presented to Blue Ridge Pet Clinic for evaluation of cough and not urinating since being adopted. Upon exam, the dog's bladder was full. Dr. Ponder catheterized the dog to relieve the bladder and dispense pain medication and antibiotics. The next day, the dog was presented to Dr. Ponder due to no improvement. Radiographs revealed an abnormality in the abdomen and exploratory surgery was indicated. Dr. Clark performed surgery, which revealed a necrotic uterine stump with a uterine body ligated at its base. The necrotic uterine stump was removed. A red rubber catheter was placed in the urinary bladder and dark red urine was expressed. No other abnormalities were noted and the dog was closed and recovered. So this case was brought directly to you for your review and consideration.
Okay, thank you. So we do not have the complainant here. Mr. Stoll, you are
monitoring.
Okay, Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how much to get into the case because technically this was a shelter dog with a surgery that was performed by a shelter veterinarian, which does not fall under our purview. Yes.
And complainant was not the owner. Yeah.
And the complainant, yeah. Well, and yeah, the complainant was not the owner at the time of the surgery. I mean, we can discuss it further if you'd like, because I had questions as far as the other doctors that were working on the dog and their reported findings. But yeah, we don't have any purview over this case.
So, but she is licensed by.
Yes.
In the state of Arizona.
Yes, but she did the surgery. It was animal that her
thing. So even though we can't, could we still issue a letter of concern?
But I'm not sure that there is a letter of concern. So
say her attitude is a letter of concern.
That goes between.
Nothing happened, and trying to blame everything on the owner. She didn't report it, or she didn't report it sooner because there wasn't a problem with what they said. She got instructions, if you see redness, if you see this, if you see all related to the spay, if you see this, come back and see us. Well, there wasn't any of that. The dog couldn't pee. Now, it turned out to be a result of that, why the dog couldn't pee, but nobody knew then, right? So, I mean, that's why she didn't drive 3 hours to bring it back. So, I mean, and this veterinarian did not understand that. She still, to this day, does not get that, right? That their instructions are faulty.
Well,
you know, it's anything. If you want to bring it back for anything, then you got to tell them, bring it back for anything. Or don't buy it if you're 3 hours away or something. But
yeah, but
there was something.
I mean,
there was a ligature that cut off the dog from that peeing.
No, it did not.
Then what was stopping it?
I think it was just more inflammation, honestly.
Yeah, and where I have questions is if you look at the X-rays and they say that it had a distended bladder. That bladder did not look distended to me. And on the first day when they said that the dog's bladder was so large it needed to be catheterized, and they withdrew 40 mils of
40 urine. Mils didn't look like very.
40 mils is
nothing. Yeah.
So, I mean, a dog that size should make somewhere between 250 to 500 mils of urine. So if the dog legitimately had not peed in that whole period of time, we wouldn't have relieved the bladder by taking 40 mils off. So, like, I have questions on that side. Like, the dog was probably, I mean, no doubt the dog was probably in pain, uncomfortable. There, you know, the stump did not look happy, but it was not a situation where the dog could not pee. The dog in the X-rays actually didn't produce a lot of pee, which could have been a concern had one of the ureters been tied off, but that would have been a whole other situation. So I'm not sure, and as far as the communication goes, that's each of those people have their own perception of the story. I mean, maybe there's an opportunity to soften some of that communication, but it's also the doctors that saw that dog were then stating that there was incompetence in her surgical technique when there may not have been, and there may not have been as many problems with the dog as they thought that there were.
Are you making a motion?
I'm making a motion. We don't have purview over.
No, we don't have purview.
So I would say, I mean, dismiss.
Do we even dismiss it if there's no purview?
Yeah.
And then can we, just as a reminder, you know, letting the complaint know, because I understand her frustration, I'm sure, you know, and just, you know, making sure, of course, they understand, because I know it's, you know, and they're saying the vet board didn't do anything, you know, and I know that's kind of a different or a difficult piece to understand what we do and do not regulate, but. As long as that's emphasized, that
yeah, this has to go to the county board of supervisors. She could raise it to them and let them deal with it and see if that's a problem. That's the only possible option.
Okay.
All right.
Which, I mean, that's not a wrong thing. Honestly, I think we should be controlling these shelters. But that's another argument. But I mean, the county board of supervisors is a good
where you
viable
can ask
option.
Questions, right?
Yeah, but the county board of supervisors would be a viable option if she's concerned.
Okay. So. So you made a motion to dismiss
and
the
I
case
seconded.
No violation and a second. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Does anybody need a bathroom break?
Okay. Especially after all that discussion.
Okay, so why don't we take a few
Thank
minutes
you.
And then we'll finish with Mr. Escalata. And Dave, I think we're done with yours, right? Or do we have anything left?
Oh, I'm not